there are more than 500 software programs for the Macintosh office that can help managers manage, salesmen sell, bankers bank, and vice presidents do whatever it is they do. So no matter what business you're in business.
Bass 30 plus minute alpha conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Arifon Elijah. Join me today. Sure, he's written best-selling books about Apple, but have his tweets gotten favorited by Tim Cook? I don't think so. Leander Caney is here.
I know. I'm a failure.
Also with us, when Apple calls me up to join their executive team, which I'm sure will happen any day now, I'll be insisting he's hired too as vice president of beard technology. Buster Kiney is here.
Oh, hey.
That's an overlooked category.
Yeah, that's true.
I think so. Also with us, on any given day, he's probably the only one at Cult-O-Mac that's actually working. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey. Take a little break.
Nailed it, didn't I? You're taking a break right now to work on this podcast. Woo! What a show we've got for you guys this week. We all have our HomePods, and I gotta say, I didn't see this one coming. If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago if I would have been this excited about an Apple product, there's no way I would have said yes. I didn't believe the press. I thought that the press was just bloviating and sycophanting because they had gotten their HomePods early, and you know they don't want to lose those privileges because those are important privileges to get technology from Apple early. But I'm not going to bury the lead here. HomePod, it's magnificent. I think it's the first great Apple product post Steve Jobs. And in the pantheon of Apple products, it's one of their best creations they've ever had.
I think, didn't you say the same thing about AirPods though?
I would say the same thing about AirPods. 10. And also the iPhone 10 and possibly the new MacBook Pros and also the iPad, and but not the Mac Mini, Buster.
Okay.
No, I think it's definitely on the same level as AirPods, as something that I fell in love with. It has that Apple lust factor. You know what I mean? Leander, you know what I mean. That lust factor where you realize you're actually falling in love with a piece of technology and you have a tangible sense of emotion about this piece of technology. Are you in the same boat as I am?
Not quite as enamored, but I understand what you mean, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we'll talk about all that, and we'll talk about the good stuff and the bad stuff. And there is some bad stuff. There's actually a big issue that surfaced this week that Apple is trying to downplay, but I think it's significant, and I think it's something that you need to know about before you buy a HomePod. So we'll talk about that. Also, Apple's plans to make software great again. This is going to be a major cultural shift for them. It came out this week that Apple is serious about taking their time, building software right, and getting rid of all the bugs that we've been seeing in iOS and in macOS lately. And if you think back, hasn't there been a ton of stuff that just hasn't worked right out of the gates? We'll be talking more about that, and we'll be wrapping up with a story that we talked about last week about Apple's hiring spree. You know, they're hiring all these new engineers, and they have all these positions open. And we talked about it last week, and we were like, well, they're clearly working on something. What could it be? Well, of course, once we stopped recording, Leander figured it out. And we were already done. So we're going to revisit that. And I think Leander is right. He was, through his own powers of deduction and reason, he was looking the types of positions that they're hiring for. And as soon as he said it, I was like, oh my gosh, dude, you're absolutely right. We know what Apple's building now. So we'll be wrapping up the show with that conversation. Before we dive into our own sycophantic bloviations about HomePod, let me say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. With Squarespace, you can churn your cool idea. You know that one you've been chewing on for a while? Turn it into a new website. Promote yourself to potential employers, especially if you're a college student. You have a skill set you want to sell to people. You could sell products and services of all kinds. Promote your physical or online business, or announce an upcoming event. Maybe you're getting married or something. Squarespace does this by giving you a beautiful website that you can set up quickly. They have beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality, which lets you sell anything online, and now it has Apple Pay integration, built-in search engine optimization, 24/7 customer service, award-winning customer service, and everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. You build one site, and it looks great on any device that visits. Check it out yourself. Go to squarespace.com. You could sign up for a free trial. They don't even need your credit card information or anything. It's really easy, simple, and fast. And then build a website. See how you like it. Everything is drag and drop. It couldn't be easier, especially adding images and your social media and videos and stuff. You'll be surprised how easy it is. And at the end of your two-week free trial, if you want to continue your service, you can use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. And if you order a year of service, you get an additional discount plus a free domain name at squarespace.com. Okay, here we go. Hands on with the HomePod. Leander, you had yours open on Friday. I remember when we spoke and I was like, don't tell me what you think. I don't want to know. I was like, I can feel you about to tell me how it's been going. And I wanted it to surface here on the show. So Leander, your thoughts first, please.
I think it sounds really great. It really does sound fantastic. We have a couple here in the office.
You Lewis got a couple?
Well, Lewis got one and I got one. Mm-hmm. And we put them up at the opposite ends of the room. The office here, and it actually sounds better at a distance. Like Lewis's HomePod sounds better at my end of the room, like across the room, than it does close up. Isn't that right, Lewis?
That's what I think. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I haven't moved into a different place, right? I mean, I can't wait to get it to my house and see how it sounds there. I read somewhere that if you have it set up on like a kind of a flimsy table, it affects the sound quality. And you know, it's on a desk. It's not the world's most sturdy desk, right?
Hmm.
Who knows? I'm going to find a really heavy-duty wood table and put it on that. Something with a really nice oil finish.
Yeah. Make sure it's a family heirloom, too.
Yeah, definitely an antique.
Use a coaster.
But it really sounds fantastic, though. You know, like it really fills the room with really nice sound.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really got some hefty bass, too. It's actually kind of surprising.
It's shocking,
its size.
The bass that comes out of it.
Right. You know, I can't fault it. I think it really sounds fantastic. And this is just from one speaker, too. I mean, you know, I think getting a stereo pair will be amazing.
Are you still planning on doing that?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. Definitely. Now, before, I was on the fence because, again, I didn't think that this product was going to live up to the hype. It was getting so hyped. I didn't think there was any way it could live up to the hype. But I think it surpassed the hype. I really do think it's one of Apple's greatest products. Lewis, are you with me? Leander seems like he loves it, but he's a little bit more lukewarm than I am, clearly.
Well, I want to defer to Lewis because Lewis has got golden ears. Lewis is a professional musician. Lewis knows what he's talking about. Like,
okay,
whenever he gets into test, you know, like requires like some speakers or some headphones, I'm like, Lewis, what do you think? And then I basically copy what he says. So,
but you paraphrase it to make it sound like you came up with it, right?
Like, yeah, me. Exactly.
Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sounds awesome from across the room, but I have it set up right by my monitor, and up close, it sounds a little shrill to me, you know? It's just a little, something about the mids and the high. I was reading, what was it? Somebody was talking, I think Consumer Reports.
It was Consumer Reports.
Oh, the mid-range sounds hazy and blah, blah. I'm like, good God, the mid-range doesn't sound hazy at all to me. It sounds intense, a little bit much for my ears. And, you know, it all depends on what you listen to as well. You know, I mean, if you're listening to it, looked, I think what they were, I don't know what they were listening to, but
probably soft jazz, something lame.
Yeah, I mean, we listen to it with a bunch of different kinds of music, you know.
You listen to Drake?
From heavy metal to, you know, big band jazz from the 40s.
No hip hop, though.
Not yet. That's not true. Listen to something old.
Bass heavy?
Enemy.
You talk too much is what I listen to. No, I think the bass sounds great. And I think in general it sounds great. I mean, it sounds so much better than, the original Echo that I have at my house. It's just, you know, after reading all these things and all, you know, oh my God, it's an audiophile's dream. It's like uses technology with $85,000 speakers and it's worth well over $1,000. Okay. Well, it sounds damn good for a pumpkin size speaker. It does not sound like a $10,000 stereo system.
Have you heard a lot of $10,000 stereo systems?
Well, I mean, I've heard. So I've never owned one, but I've heard them, and you know, from like our drummer's living room. You know, this guy spent thousands of dollars on his awesome, awesome stereo, and everything sounds fantastic. And where I've listened, I mean, the thing is, most of the time when I've heard this kind of high end stuff, it's been in very kind of rarefied environments. Like it's not the crappy. Concrete Cult of Mac headquarters, you know, it's
crappy concrete.
I'm sorry,
boy, he really is getting honest. It's all coming out now.
Postmodern. You know, you're listening to it in a studio or a listening room inside a high-end stereo place where they set this up specifically to sound as good as possible, right?
Uh-huh. So, right, they got sound dampening stuff on the walls.
Yeah, I mean, so in my mind, I think it sounds great. I got no problem recommending it to people. I don't know. Part of me was hoping like I would hear it and I would get that like full body tingle that you get in, you know, the best stereo. Or, you know, audio environments. It's not the best audio environment, but it is damn good. And, you know, for that price, it's pretty awesome.
I mean, it's the best for that price by far.
Yeah.
That's a thing. There certainly are better sounding speakers out there. There are better sounding sound systems out there. Of course there are. I mean, there are sound systems that cost $100,000. There's no way those are going to compare to this.
Sure.
But most people would never dream to have a sound system that cost that much money. And I think that takes this speaker takes a lot of the inspirations from systems like that and puts it into a product that most people can afford. And when the Wall Street Journal said they thought it sounded better than $1,000 speakers, again, I had a hard time believing it. But this is one of the best speakers I've ever heard. I mean, it put my jaw on the ground when I listened to it for the first time. In fact, if you guys haven't seen my YouTube video I did about it, I recorded myself listening to it for the first time. And it really did shock me. I was totally shocked. And at the end of the listening session, I didn't really even know what to say because I was so surprised and I was so taken off guard that I was just kind of sitting there in a stupor, not knowing what to say.
That's
because
highly unusual.
I couldn't believe the experience that I had just had. I mean, the presence of the speaker, it looks, if I were to let you listen to this speaker behind a wall, right? If we were on the dating show and I had it behind a wall and I let you listen to it, you would never guess it was as small as it was. It sounds like a speaker that's much larger than it is. And the amount of thump this thing puts out, it is just unbelievable. I can't believe sometimes how much my desk will shake with the resonance of the bass. And it pierces you, you know? It just goes through your body. And the delineation between different resonances and different frequencies, I heard stuff in my music that I have never heard before, ever. Listening to $1,000 headphones, there's stuff that was presented with this speaker that I didn't know was there, like harmonies that are played. For example, I was listening to Good Old Fashioned Lover Boy by Queen, and Brian May, he's playing these harmonic parts with his guitar that are harmonizing with Freddie Mercury's voice. I had never heard those before. Those are things that get lost in the mash when you are listening via other, you know, acoustical instruments, I guess, that you just hear the melody, but you don't hear those nuances. And this speaker delivers all of those nuances in such a sexy, soulful way, in such a balanced way, that I was just marveling at the technology. And I'm doing it again right now. I wasn't even going to try it. I was trying to avoid doing this because when you start talking about it in these terms, it sounds like you're being disingenuous. And I think there are a lot of people out there who are trying to say good things about Apple products because they know that's what people want to hear and they know that that's what will get the clicks. Anyway, Consumer Reports says that this product doesn't sound as good as the Google Max. And let's see here, what else do they say that doesn't sound as good
Sonos.
As? Oh, the Sonos One, which I don't know what kind of drugs they're doing over there at Consumer Reports. But that's a place that I want to work because you get to listen to speakers all day and do drugs. There's no way that those speakers sound as good as this one. But I have to caveat, I haven't heard the Google Max yet.
Well,
is that even commonly available?
Yeah.
There's no way.
How can there's you no say? I mean, okay.
Because there's no way Google came up with a product that is as refined as this product is. This is the ultimate confluence of Steve Jobs' passions of of technology and artistry. And this is the product that I think he always wanted. And I don't think that Google is passionate enough to create a product like this. Do you disagree?
I think that's probably a safe bet, but I'm never going to say that there's no that it doesn't sound as good if I've never actually heard one. I mean, I'm just conservative that
way. Yeah, you kind of do actually have to hear it before you can form an opinion.
Well, I like to form my opinions before I have information, Leander.
You're ready and then I backfill.
Although it's got, the Google Max is kind of middling reviews, isn't it? I mean, has anyone all the reviews are kind of they're like meh.
That's what I've heard.
Well, all the smart speakers, that's how the reviews are for all of them. They all sound, they sound fine. But no one has ever said they sound incredible. No one has ever said they sound magnificent. They're not life-changing in any way. So that's why I was surprised to see them saying that it sounded better than the HomePod. I guess, though, sound is subjective, right? You said you thought it sounded somewhat shrill.
Yes.
Lewis, and I don't feel that way at all.
Close up.
Sound depends on not only just your ears, but what you're listening to and the room you're in. Those are important things. And that's, the other report that's been getting a lot of play about this is, the famous audiophile report on Reddit, right? Talking about how awesome it is. Well, that guy, got kind of smacked down by somebody else who says, hey, your tests that you ran, you didn't run it in an anechoic chamber, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a complicated thing, right? I mean, what are you listening to? Where are you standing in the room? What's the room made of? What's the thing sitting on? How close is it to the wall? I mean, all these things affect the way the sound hits you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's definitely a personal thing. And I can't wait to get it home and just see what it sounds like in a larger room with some softer materials in it and see.
Did you see the Sonos CEO? I mean, he posted his reactions on Twitter. And he thought that it sounded better than the Sonos One. This is the Sonos CEO.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Are you serious?
High compliment.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, well, a single one. But then as soon as they doubled up, he thought the Sonos sounded better than a single HomePod. A pair of stereo pair of Sonos Ones sounded better than a single HomePod. But he admitted that a single Sonos One compared to a HomePod, the HomePod sounded better. Huh.
The HomePod is did I say this already? It's one of the best speakers I've ever heard in my entire life. That's just true. I haven't spent a lot of time around $25,000 sound systems, but I've listened to a lot of different speaker systems, prosumer level, and this is heads and tails better than any of them.
Well, it's definitely got that sort of lively, energetic sound that's missing in a lot of sort of mid-range things. They don't have, like you're saying, the nuance that you hear. That kind of thing. That's the kind of thing that really is awesome when you're listening to music, when you suddenly hear this fantastic guitar line or this amazing vocal melody that you never noticed before, because it's all just been this like kind of blah wash of sound, right? And this thing definitely plucks some of that out. I'm with you. I think it's a great sounding thing. I really can't wait to hear two of them together. And I've never actually listened to the Sonos stuff, so I can't comment on that. But
well, shoot, good thing we have Mr. Sonos himself on the show.
He's got an endorsement.
He's got like 15 Sonos. Yeah, exactly.
He's like one of those NASCAR drivers. He's got Sonos logos all over his clothes.
That's right. You're like, is that Leander? He's covered in Sonos branding. It's like, yeah, it's just how he lives his life. So, Leander, compared to Sonos speakers, what are your thoughts?
Well, I knew this was going to come up, and I felt really guilty because I knew I should have done a test this week. But to be honest, I haven't done a head-to-head yet.
You're so in love with the HomePod that you didn't even bother to compare it to anything else.
Well, if I'm going to do it, it's going to take a little bit of time. And I just have been busy all this week, and I haven't had the time to sort of sit down and say, okay, let's try it, in a sort of head-to-head, which I should do. I'll do that for next week.
Okay, yeah, definitely do a comparison, because that's one of the biggest questions I've had from people so far is how does it sound versus HomePod or Sonos One particularly. And people, I did a comparison to the Echo. Well, I did a bass test with my MacBook Pro and then the Echo in this YouTube video that I did, but I wasn't trying to compare the Echo to the HomePod. They're not even the same product, and they even said that in the review itself. I just wanted to give you a baseline. Here's a common product that many people use. Here's how it sounds. And now here's how the HomePod sounds. And they're not even the same category of product. Again, Apple specifically bills this as a music speaker that's also a smart assistant. I think that's different than the Amazon ECHO, which is a smart speaker that also does music. And you can tell when you listen to them one after another, they are not the same product in any way. This is a speaker, and it also does, you know, smart stuff as well, which we should probably talk about because that is included. The Siri stuff is also part of the speaker, and I haven't used it a lot, but, you know, honestly, I am way less disappointed with the Siri stuff than I thought I was going to be. It does pretty much what it needs to do for me. It controls all of my HomeKit accessories, and it allows me to ask it simple questions like weather. You could set timers. You can ask it basic factual questions or math questions, and it might be able to answer those. And I think it's fine. It's not as good as the Amazon ECHO, but I wasn't expecting it to be. What are your thoughts on that, Lander?
About what, sorry?
About the smart stuff, the AI stuff, and the HomePod.
Oh, I thought we were going to discuss that in the context of that report. But,
of what report? We can do that. Yeah. So let me bring up this story first, then, because there actually were some tests that tested the accuracy of the AI in Siri on the HomePod, and it was comparing it to other speakers. And I'll link to this in the show notes. Our old pal, Genie Munster, he lives. I thought he was gone. I thought he had retired, but he's apparently resurfaced. He's working at a place called Loop Ventures, and they did some tests on the Siri AI. They asked it a bunch of questions, and here's how it performed versus other smart speakers. So Google Home, surprisingly, but maybe not surprisingly, was able to answer 81% of their questions correctly. The Amazon products with Alexa only were able to do 64%. Microsoft's Cortana products, 57% accuracy, and the HomePod, 52.3%. So the worst of the bunch, but not a whole lot worse than Amazon Alexa. Have you had any issues with Siri so far, Lander?
Well, you know, no, because I've been, you know, using it in a very limited context, like you said, you know, mainly to play music.
Uh-huh.
And in that report, it pointed out that, you know, Siri has a 99.4% accuracy.
Yeah.
Excuse me, in understanding the queries. And that's been the experience here. Yeah, we've had no problem with the understanding, you know, what you want it to do. But, you know, it's been limited to asking about music mainly. We asked a couple of questions like about the weather and about travel times and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the one thing I looked at that report that, from Genie Munster, and you know, he said that it was you know, they asked questions in various different categories: navigation, email, calendar. And the reason that Siri scored so low was because it doesn't do, you know, four or five things that the other ones do, i.e., you know, navigation,
right,
email, stuff like that. So they said if they took that out, it actually answered, I think, closer to 70% of the questions correctly. So
wow,
you know, this is, I think, you know, I don't know if it's fair to compare them because, like you said, you know, it's a speaker first and a smart assistant second, and they've limited, Apple has limited, you know, Siri's knowledge domain on HomePod quite severely. You know, Siri on your phone can do a lot more than Siri on HomePod can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of getting it to play music, the only thing, it's been great. You know, it's been near flawless, I think. How many, didn't it screw up a couple of times, Lewis?
Well, there are a couple of times where you'd ask it, like I ask it to play some Glenn Miller song, right?
Right.
And it's because in Apple Music, the recording that I was trying to get it to play is by Glenn Miller and his orchestra, not just Glenn Miller. So, I mean, yeah, okay, that kind of stuff's annoying, you know, if you don't get the name of a band exactly right. I mean, well, what do you expect, really? I mean,
that happens on the on the ECHO.
Yeah, I think this report, like Leander's saying, this report is bunk. You know, it's like saying, oh, well, that hammer doesn't work very well as a knife. It's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
Well, there is an expectation, and I was kind of interested because you know, I wonder whether Apple's approach to AI, you know, is what's hurting it here, because, you know, everything you say to Alexa and to Google Home gets sent to their servers,
right?
You know, and they're mining this stuff, and they're really keenly, you know, they want you to, you know, and Amazon, you know, obviously has opened it up, you know, the API to all these different, you know, these different companies, and you can do almost anything with it. It's a much more open platform, you know. And then Siri is trying to answer a lot of stuff locally, and it's making a decision, you know, whether it can be done locally before it sends any kind of data out to the cloud. And you know, Apple's, you know, I trust it to you know, to guard our privacy a lot more closely than I do, you know, Google and Amazon. And so the, all the privacy concerns that they're building into this thing, you know, I think hampers its capabilities.
Oh, absolutely.
Or they're being circumspect about it, rather.
I think that's one of Apple's big problems, too. I mean, it's the same with Apple Maps and their other AI products, and that they keep all your data on the device that you're using, and they don't send it out to their servers, like you said, Lander, and they're not mining everyone's data and comparing it and chopping it up. And so it just puts Apple at a major disadvantage. I wish they would let you opt in to, or opt out of the privacy stuff and let them use it so they could analyze your data and make their AI more intelligent, because that's going to be Apple's, that's going to be forever Apple's problem. Is Google, no wonder Google's so accurate, right? They are using everyone's data and doing whatever they want with it, and so they're able to learn a lot more from it, whereas Apple doesn't do that. And so they end up being, you know, limited in what they can do. But I will say, the speaker can hear you really well. When you say its name, it immediately tunes in, and I love that little effervescent glow, that Siri glow on the top. It's so sexy. The entire speaker is so sexy. Wow. I just love looking at it, and that little glow that just happens on the top when you're speaking to it, and it immediately responds to you. It's so snappy. You know, it's like you say its name, and it's like, boom!
Yeah, that's true. Go, that's one thing. You know? That's one thing we noticed. It is fast. It's really, really fast.
And accurate. We were marveling at this. I mean, I'm not kidding. Leander, okay, you've heard Leander's voice. He's got a little bit of an accent, right? Well, I was cranking something out of my corner of the office. I mean, it was loud. And Leander, across the room, said, "Hey, Siri." You know, like about that loud. Not yelling, oh. Not... Whoops. Hey, there she is. Welcome back. Hey.
Good timing.
But you know, it got it. It heard what he said, and it answered the question or played the song. And I mean, I you talk about jaw dropping. I was astonished because, I mean, that does not work that way with the Echo Dot and the Echo that I have at my house. And it certainly doesn't work that way with the Mega Blast portable speaker that has Alexa built in. So that part is, I mean, that's astonishingly good. I've never seen anything work that well.
The ECHO works really well, but there are times when you have music playing loudly or there's a lot of other competing voices happening where you have to say it's, you have to try to invoke its name several times, which is so frustrating, isn't it? When you're trying to yell, yelling angrily at your ECHO, just trying to get it to freaking turn the volume down or do something, and it's like not listening.
Yeah, that's totally ironic. You know, it's like, the louder it is, the harder it is to get it to shut off.
Yeah, well, I need to test the Siri functionality more, but again, we mentioned this last week. The hardware here is what's important. I think the hardware is incredible. And the software stuff, Apple is going to be improving upon. And do we know when they're going to add stereo support and multi-room support? Have you guys heard? Or is it just this year?
Coming soon, I think is what it's
coming soon? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as soon as they add stereo support, I'm buying another one of these for sure. And I'm just going to sit here with the stiffest nips you've ever seen listening to two HomePods. And just in pure bliss. I really... I'll say it again. This is one of those golden era Apple products. I can just, in my mind, I can see Steve Jobs pitching this on stage, and he would be proud of this product. I really do think he would be proud of that. The more music I throw at this, the more impressed I become. It's so adept at all these different genres of music. I haven't really heard one that sounds bad yet. Have you, Lewis?
No, well, you know, just that kind of mid-rangey thing that I find a little annoying. But yeah, from across the room, fantastic. And yeah, I mean, I've listened to a lot of different stuff too. And yeah, I think it sounds good pretty much across the board. And again, I'm comparing it to much better speakers, you know, rather than, I mean, to say that it sounds bad, like compared to something, you know, amazing is. It's almost like the thing of like it doesn't answer questions, right? When you ask it questions, it can't answer.
The one thing that's been lacking for me is not being able to play the radio from London.
Really?
Yeah. Well, because that's what I do mostly with the ECHL.
Yeah.
Is right. I sort of play the radio from the UK. And I called out to Siri a couple of times and it says, oh, I can't do that on HomePod. Of course, it will play Beats 1 radio.
What do you play that with, like, some... I mean, what do you use on Echo? What is it calling
tune
up?
Tune in
rate, yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, Apple can add that stuff,
they're
right?
They're going to add that stuff in, Lander. You know they
Well,
are.
That's a big question, isn't it? You know, what third-party music services are they going to add to it? You know, the good thing about the Sonos is that it supports, I think, 80 services.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch, you know, and...
Echo 2.
Right.
Yeah. I that's the one thing that kind of drives me crazy about Apple all the time, right? Is it's like... You know, they're so exclusive or whatever, unwilling to allow. I mean, they did the same thing, though, like with Apple Watch when it first came out, right? I mean, so many things that it probably could do, they wouldn't let it do at first because they're timid or whatever. I don't know.
Well, the ironic thing is, as well, is that iTunes used to have a really pretty good, initially anyway, a good, you know, world radio section. Do you remember that? You used to be able to tune into all these different streaming
stations.
Yeah,
is that gone?
Yeah. It's been gone for a while. And it sucked for a while too, to be honest, because they didn't keep it up to date. It was like a dusty backwater of iTunes. And when it debuted, you know, it was pretty good. It was fairly comprehensive. You know, you could find a lot of stuff on there. But then it kind of got really crufty, and they didn't keep the links up and stuff like that. I mean, I wish they'd buy a company like TuneIn and. Integrated into iTunes.
Oh gosh, don't even get me started. We can talk about podcast improvements too. Oh man,
there's
a lot of that stuff that's just languishing. Apple is just not doing anything with it.
Did you try to play the cold? It wouldn't play the cold cast.
Yeah,
that
I couldn't get it to do it either.
Right.
And then I tried Sonos, and ECHO, and it played just straight away.
I couldn't get it's not just the cold cast. Now hold on, it was any podcast. I couldn't. You would have thought it was programmed to not play that content the way it was obstinately refusing. But I tried other podcasts, and it wouldn't play any of my podcasts at all. It's like it didn't know they were there.
What's up with that?
Not good. Yeah, it must be a bug. And there were some bugs with this device. In fact, one of the ones I wanted to highlight was the setup bug. I was setting it up, first of all, I didn't even know how the hell to set it up. I was sitting there and I was just waiting for it to do something. And then it occurred to me, well, maybe I need to open my phone. And so I opened my phone and that little pop-up came up like it does with AirPods. And it started to set up the HomePod. And during the process, I couldn't get past this blank screen. And I guess that was the most common issue people had with it. And that is because, in my case, I didn't have Apple Music installed on my phone, which, of course, it doesn't tell you. It just doesn't work. And that was a really common problem. And I guess your devices, in order to interface with HomePod, need to be running the latest version of iOS. And you need to have both the Music and the Home apps installed on your device. Otherwise, the setup will stall. And they don't even tell you that. Again, you would just be left...
How did you figure that out?
I had to Google it. I was actually making the YouTube video, and originally this little session of me figuring it out was part of the video, and I pulled it out because I was like, no one wants to see this.
Right.
But I had to sit there and Google it for like 15 minutes because I couldn't get the damn thing working. And then as soon as I installed Apple Music, you know, boom, it worked.
It's actually quite tricky, isn't it? All the different things. I mean, for me, it worked perfectly, and it took like about a minute. Because I have
You didn't have any issues.
Yeah. No, and like you said, you have to have keychain, right? iCloud keychain set up.
Oh, right. Yeah, and then there's that. Two-factor authentication needs to be turned on, too.
Right. So there's actually a bunch of intricate little things that have to actually be set up before it'll work.
And how would you know that?
Right.
I mean, there's no way you would know.
That is odd.
I did have it set up, and it was you know, really quick and really actually quite great.
Because Leander installs everything the moment it becomes available. Everything is just installed. He's got 1,890 apps installed on his iPhone.
Whoa, what did you delete? Apple Music?
I deleted it.
That much?
I just don't use it. So I was like, if I don't use an app, I get rid of it. Why keep it on your phone?
Well, so
I use Spotify.
So what about now with the Apple, with the HomePod? What are you doing?
Apple Music? So get this. So I should have announced this at the beginning of the episode. Boy! Have I got this thing figured out? Okay, so you could stream AirPlay to Spotify, or you could stream Spotify to AirPlay. How do I say this? You could stream Spotify to the HomePod via AirPlay, is what my brain is attempting to communicate. But doing so on the Mac is not easy at all. It's actually a huge pain in the ass. You have to switch your audio settings to have it route all your audio to AirPlay and then send it to the HomePod. But it works great on the iPhone. So what you need to do if you're in Spotify is, and again, this is the magic of Spotify, because you can control another device playing Spotify with another, with any device that you have that plays Spotify, that's confusing. When you have the Spotify app opening on your Mac, for instance, you can control Spotify on your iPhone if you have the iPhone version of that app opened. So what I have been doing is I stream Spotify from my iPhone, but then I have Spotify on my Mac open, and it says, you're sending this music to your iPhone. So because I'm doing that, I can control Spotify from my Mac on my iPhone, and then the iPhone streams it to the HomePod. I know this sounds incredibly convoluted and everyone's going cross-eyed, but it actually works really well. So if you're trying to control your music on Spotify on your Mac, you just stream it to your iPhone and then AirPlay it to your HomePod, and it works fantastically and is really convenient as well. Before we go on to the bad stuff, does anyone have any final thoughts, Lander, Lewis, Buster? Although, Buster, have we convinced you to buy one?
Nope.
Okay, well, he's going to hear one and he'll be changing his tune. Lander.
You know, for the price, excellent speaker.
Yeah. Okay. Lewis?
Yeah, I mean,
your Jerry Springer final words moment?
I would absolutely recommend the thing, especially if you are an Apple Music user. I mean, I can't believe that it won't encourage people like you to switch over. I mean,
yeah, right. And you know, one thing I think, you know, I reckon that this is a, I think this is the end of dumb speakers. I don't think that you know, like, speakers now have got to be smart, right? Not just Bluetooth speakers, but, you know, home stereo systems. I think, you know, like, this is the old chestnut of Apple being sort of, you know, never the first to the market, mm-hmm. but, you know, usually being the best. Mm-hmm. I think this is the future of the home stereo. You know, I think it's got to be, you know, stereo makers, if anyone's making a CD player or any kind of home stereo component, home theater component even, without some kind of smart capabilities, is, you know, they're behind. That's just not going to sell. I think this is the expectation now for home speakers, is that they're going to be, all of them from now on are going to be smart.
It would be incredible if Apple supported theater setups like Sonos does, and you could set these like behind you and then in front of you and have them work with your Apple TVs for surround sound. Get out of here. You just get right out of here. You know what I'm ready for? I want a HomePod Mini and HomePod Pro, Leander, twice the size, twice the price.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that. Yeah, definitely.
Twice the thunder.
Yeah, a big one with a big, you know, subwoofer.
I would die.
You
can't
even hear it. It just shakes. It just rumbles the house. Rumbles the furniture.
It just shakes your fillings, Liz.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I would definitely pay twice the price for twice the size and twice the power. Maybe even thrice the power. We'll see. Yeah. I'm totally in love with this device, and I think you will be too. So if you weren't considering one, again, go check it out. There is one bad thing that we should highlight, but before we do that, I do want to say thank you to Art of the Charm for supporting this episode. Hey, Art of the Charm is an iTunes top 50 podcast that is packed with wisdom in the truest sense of the word. From how to become more productive and professional to how to read body language, network, and negotiate. You could be a master negotiator like Lewis is. The show basically covers anything that will help you become a high performer at home and at work, just like Lewis. And with an armory of powerful weapons like influence, persuasion, it's like this is describing you, Lewis. It brings together interesting people like Shaq, Russell Brand, Larry King, Neil deGrasse Tyson, and Bill Nye to discuss relationships, attraction, life hacking, and success. The Art of Charm is highly addictive and strives to be fun and educational at the same time, just like this show. It's not some stuffy college professor textbook stuff. Personal growth shouldn't be so boring all the time. This isn't pop psychology either and superficial advice. This is a show that offers meaningful, fun, life-changing insights with a practical edge that you can apply right out of the box right now. You deserve an extraordinary life that's like Lewis's. You could be living the dream just like Lewis. Go to theartofcharm.com/podcast, theartofcharm.com/podcast, or search for The Art of Charm on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and start taking your life to the next level, the Lewis Wallace level. All the things that you are, Lewis.
Oh, man, okay. Short. Probably don't have a thing on how to be short.
You're not that short, are you? Well, I'll tell you.
3'9".
You're 3'9"? Well, you certainly, your stature seems more like a 5'1", 5'2" type man. You project much larger than you are.
That's the magic of radio.
Lewis is going to be playing one of the Ewoks in an upcoming Star Wars movie. Okay, so the big problem. You probably heard about this week. I think this is a big problem, and Apple's downplaying this like it's not, but their reply to this problem was so classically Apple. I can just imagine.
I know. I could hear Steve Jobs reading
right?
it out.
This is a right. this is a classic Steve Jobs pitch. What was that lady's name? Katie Cotton? Is that who was that the old press person that was working in Apple?
Right. Yeah.
This is a Katie Cotton strategy right here. So HomePods are apparently making their mark in new homes across the country. Oh, good one. But not in a good way. A lot of Apple customers have started noticing that the HomePod can actually damage wood furniture. It leaves a white ring resting on the table where it was placed, and this can happen after just a few minutes or days. Apple has confirmed the problem, saying the marks can improve over several days after the speaker is removed from the wood surface. Apparently, it has something to do with the silicone itself, the silicone ring on the bottom. But they have suggested to Apple that owners try cleaning the surface with a manufacturer-suggested oiling method, and if the white ring doesn't disappear, well, it's not really that big of a deal, guys. All you need to do is refinish your furniture. Is that so much to ask? This is the you're holding it wrong of the post-Jobs generation. I mean, refinish your furniture? Are they out of their minds? So I'm glad that I read this before I tried this, but I have this really beautiful mid-century chest in my living room that has my Amazon Echo. It has like a lamp and, you know, other little tchotchkes. And I was thinking about placing it there. And if this thing put a white ring on my beautiful walnut veneer dresser, I would lose my I would be pissed. And what would you do about it? Apple is not going to replace your $1,000 piece of furniture. They're going to tell you to oil it. Oiling it is not going to fix this problem. If you have a white ring that's been left, it's like leaving a cup with ice and water in it.
Well, that's a good question, because I was looking into this. I just did a little bit of Googling around before coming on the show, and I don't think it's necessarily permanent. I think Apple's right. In some cases, maybe most cases, maybe you know a few cases, it's temporary. And I was actually trying to figure out what it's actually caused by. You know, why does it leave a white ring?
Mm-hmm.
And the best explanation I found was that it's actually stirring up the oil, you know, on the table, uh-huh. on the wood, uh-huh. and sort of bubbling it up. It's actually caused by the vibrations.
Huh. And not by the silicone itself?
No, it's actually the vibrations are bubbling, are sort of disrupting the oil in the wood and bubbling it up to the surface and creating little sort of micro bubbles. This is just one theory I read. I actually just wrote an email to a furniture restorer in Brooklyn asking if he'd heard of this before. But, you know, like other speakers do it too. You know, Sonos, right? So it actually, you know, a Sonos speaker will do the same thing. And it's not caused by the silicone. It's not caused by, you know, the material. It's caused by the vibration.
Hmm. I cannot Apparently. Wait to read this expose.
So I don't know if that's true, and if Apple suggested in its support document, you know, if you leave it for a few days, it'll just sort of disappear on its own.
Really?
Apparently.
I don't buy that at all. A ring on your table is just going to suddenly disappear. A white ring is just going to suddenly disappear.
Well, I've got it here on my table here at the office, so I'll move the speaker and see what happens.
Let us know. Well, the best part of this story by far is if you want to avoid this problem, Apple's recommended solution is quite simple. Put your HomePod on a coaster. Yes, the coaster your grandma's always yelling at you about to not ruin her furniture. Just take that coaster and put it under your HomePod. And lest you not have a coaster that you can use, there are several reputable retailers that have already begun selling it. Talk about acting quick. This story just came out. There are already companies selling a HomePod coaster. And of course, there are a whole slew of memes now on Twitter of people suggesting ways to prevent the ring from appearing on your wooden table. My favorite was the HomePod sock, which is akin to the iPod sock, right? It's just a giant sock that goes over the bottom of your HomePod, which made me laugh. And somebody put one in overalls, these little mini overalls, which was very cute.
The whole point, though, is that the reason they put silicon on the bottom is to keep it put, so right. It doesn't bounce around everywhere. So if you put it on a coaster or in a sock, isn't it going to slide around everywhere?
I don't know. You'd have to try it. Yeah, because this thing, I mean, it puts out so much bass. It probably vibrates so much it might shift itself out of position, like fall off the table. You got to hear this thing. If you haven't heard it, the bass that comes out of it.
There we go again.
Let's restart right from the beginning. The bass that comes out of this thing will make your jaw drop. It's unbelievable how much bass comes out of this tiny little speaker. Okay, so we're gonna move on finally from the HomePod talk. There will be more, I'm sure, in upcoming episodes. But let's move on for now. There was another important story this week about how Apple plans to root out bugs and revamp their iPhone software. And I think just get more serious about software in general. And it's a major cultural shift for them. Lander, you take the lead. I'm going to sit here and just be quiet and daydream about HomePod.
I'm interrupted by the time I've got to the third word.
I'll wait to the sixth or seventh. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. So Bloomberg had a
report
this week.
Sorry.
Bloomberg had a report that Apple's going to start focusing for the next 2 years of updates for its iPhone and iPad operating system. It's going to continue to update the software annually, but internally, engineers will have more discretion to push back features that aren't as polished to the following year. So software chief Craig Federighi laid out a new strategy to his army of engineers last month, according to a person familiar with the discussion. His team will have more time to work on the new features and focus on under-the-hood refinements without being tied to a list of new features annually, simply so this company can tout a massive year-over-year leap. The renewed focus on quality is designed to make sure the company can fulfill promises made each summer at the annual developers conference, and that new features will work reliably and as advertised. The decision to give engineers more time to perfect software is apparently a major cultural shift. And at Google, teams update apps on their own schedule and aren't tied to the annual Android release. At Apple, all new features are tied to the big release in the fall, when Apple rolls out its splashes new software, and more modest updates in the spring.
So, your thoughts, Leander? You said you thought the whole thing was bunk.
Well, yeah, you know, it seems like, you know, it's being touted as a big cultural change because Apple, of course, has been coming under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of criticism for, you know, bugs and, you know, seemingly really bad mistakes in its software, you know, of recent. And you know, it's like the call is for Apple to slow down and to get it right and not to, you know, not to rush out all these new features, you know, that keep on going wrong. And okay, you know, that may be true, but I read a really interesting thread by Stephen Sanofsky, who used to be in charge of Windows for Microsoft, and he said that, you know, there's nothing new here. He said this is what all companies juggle, all software companies juggle all the time. It's always like, you know, are you date driven, are you feature driven, or are you quality driven? And the three aren't mutually exclusive. You've always got to juggle all three, and you know, he said that, you know, Apple at doing the stuff they're doing at the scale they're doing is unprecedented. He doesn't think that there's a company that has ever been this good at this scale. And, you know, he thinks that the complaints about the bugs is completely and utterly overblown. You know, that the company is doing astonishingly well. Look at all the stuff that it's doing that, you know, is completely and utterly seamless. You know, a few glitches has tarnished the reputation of its entire software division when they're doing things like Apple Pay, you know, iOS, macOS, tvOS, you know, all the different versions that they're doing, all the stuff that works. You know, the phones don't crash. Phones don't, you know, they rarely crash, right?
I was going to say, I had some crash.
It's, you know, it's really pretty secure. It's not riddled with, you know, viruses and privacy problems and glitches. You know, like he thinks it is astonishingly reliable and well done, you know, and that's more importantly, I think there's the company, and like many other big companies, like, you know, like Google, I'm sure, and Windows and Microsoft as well, you know, they're constantly juggling these three factors, these three things, you know, trying to rush it. Of course they want to get new features that put in and of course they want them to work right. But, you know, he didn't think that there was any really big change here. You know, he thought it was more like a pep talk, you know, that has been taken out of context and put into, you know, and turned into something that's seeming like a big cultural change, but actually isn't.
Well, I think the reason that it was considered a big cultural change is because now developers have the ability to push back and say, hey, these features aren't ready and we're not going to be including them in this year's release. They're going on next year's release, which I think before maybe wasn't an option for them, was the impression that I got
from the story.
Yeah, but in any case, I'm It's interesting. I feel I'm of two minds of the story. I'm disappointed because I want there to be as many software features as possible, right? And maybe selfishly, because we get to talk about all of them when they get released each year. And I don't want the releases to be boring. I want to have cool new features every single year for the software. But I also want Apple to continue creating quality products. And in order to create quality, you do have to take your time and make sure that something is finished before it's released. And Apple has had a lot of bugs in the last 2 years. At least that's the way it feels. And yes, I agree with your assessment, or I guess that guy who wrote the story, is they are operating at an astonishing level, and at their size, they still are creating incredible software that seems to work most of the time. But I also think that in a pursuit to beat Samsung at its own game, and that is to release a lot of new features every single year, release stuff often to kind of keep yourself hyped, they are in a way becoming Samsung. And I don't want Apple to be Samsung. I want Apple to be Apple. Let Samsung be Samsung. And if Apple needs to take more time to release something that's higher quality and more polished, I think that's ultimately going to be what most people want from Apple, at least people like us, like the true Apple fan men. I'm not going to say fanboys, because look at us. We're not boys at all. We're real men.
Were you grumbling there?
Huh? I wasn't grumbling.
That's his stomach. It's probably his. It's probably his dog's stomach. His 600-pound dog. It looks like the one in Game of Thrones. It's probably hungry. So those are my thoughts on the matter. Does anyone else have anything to say about the software stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not going to cut Buster off.
Buster,
speak away,
you go.
Well, I was just reading what Microsoft's old head of software, Steven Sinofosky, he was talking about it the other day on Twitter. And mm-hmm. said that he thinks that it's kind of over, the reports are overblown too, like Leander's saying. Mm-hmm. And that really, like, the biggest problem Apple's probably facing is the scale of the operations gotten so big that things slip through the cracks more. And so that they kind of just need to adjust, like, the scale of what they're doing and make some fine tuning. But it really shouldn't be that big of a deal for them to get back on track turning out great software all the time.
I mean, their software is already great.
Yeah. Right?
It's not like it's bad.
It sounds like everybody's saying, like, oh, Apple's like the shittiest software maker in the world because it has little bugs that come out all the time. And that's like, dude, Microsoft, who's better? Like, Microsoft still sucks. It's not like Google has phenomenal software all over. And like you're saying, Apple is becoming close to Samsung. That's just like.
No. I'm not saying they're becoming close to Samsung. Let me clear that up right now. I'm just saying. To beat Samsung, they are becoming more like Samsung. I don't think they are Samsung. I just don't want to see them even pursue that course at all.
What does that mean? Like to beat Samsung, they're becoming more like Samsung. Apple's already beating Samsung.
Yes, but
like,
I feel
that
like
makes no sense.
No, it does. In an effort to release features all the time and constantly be pumping out new software
don't think
that includes
Apple
all these new features, they're doing it too fast.
And they're
releasing things that aren't ready yet, is my point.
But you're saying that they're doing that to beat Samsung, and I really don't think Apple gives a fuck about Samsung and what they're doing.
I think they feel pressured by Samsung and other Chinese manufacturers. I do, because these gadgets are coming out. Let's say you move to a two-year cycle and you're only releasing software once every 2 years. Mm-hmm. Well, Samsung is releasing every year.
Yeah, but it doesn't
matter. Every year they have these new features that they're touting, like, right? And whether they work or not, people look at that and they say, wow, Samsung's coming out with new stuff all the time. They're getting way more press.
But similar to what Leander was saying with the HomePod, Apple takes its time to make the best product. It's not about let's get something out every year this time. I really don't think they care that much about it. Like, the HomePod, they delayed it because they couldn't get it out by Christmas as a good product. So I don't think it's really fair to say that they're just pushing out just to beat Samsung, because they're already doing better than Samsung. So the only thing they really need to focus on is quality, which is usually what Apple focuses on.
Yes, it is usually what they focus on, but they have been releasing software clearly before it's ready in the last 2 or 3 years. Mm. And that's what we want to see them stop doing, right? If it's not ready, just hold it back.
Like, what was released too early?
Well, iOS 11 had a ton of problems.
What problems?
And, well, none really come to mind right off the top of my head.
Exactly.
But when I was using
it's so horrible. It's such shitty software. They shouldn't have released it. It's like,
no, I'm not saying it was horrible. I'm not saying it was
there.
Shitty.
But that's
I'm just
like,
saying it wasn't as polished as iOS of years past.
But that's like
that
every
didn't have as many issues.
That a new iOS version comes out. The first is like the first iOS 11, 10. It's always has some bugs because it is. They are trying to get it out by the time the new iPhones come out. But I really don't think Apple's pushed out software way too early. Like, I can't think of one thing that came out way early where people were like, oh, they should have spent six more months on this iOS update.
I feel like with iOS 11, there was a problem with the iPhones rebooting. Do you remember that one? I was having that issue. And then battery issues, of course, are always one that people complain about. And with iOS 11, battery issues seem to be one that people were bringing up.
Again, those are things like common issues that come out every iOS release. So I just don't think it's gotten as worse as people are saying. I just think it's gotten like it's been amplified more by people.
So you think the problem is perception, not that anything is actually wrong?
I think it's definitely perception.
A little bit. Like, I'm not saying that they're without fault, but yeah, I do think it's overblown.
Yeah, me too.
Lewis, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I think that what they need to do is spend a little more time in Q&A. Maybe hire a couple more Q&A people, you know?
You think a couple would do it?
I have literally no idea how many people are on Apple's Q&A team. I'm sure they've got a ton of people. But, you know, look at all the bugs that get reported and like through Apple's support thing, you know, questions never get answered, right? That's the common refrain. Like, I asked this question 6 months ago. I still haven't heard an answer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, look at, we were just talking about the HomePod thing, right? I mean, it appears as if this giant problem with the setup was the result of just nobody ever trying to set the thing up that didn't have the Home app installed or set up properly or didn't have the Apple Music thing set up. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if that's what caused that particular problem, that's a real simple thing to figure out if you, you know, sort of are paying attention, right? You have a proper Q&A set up. I mean, how hard would it be to say, first, you need to do these three things? And I guess it says that on the support thing, but, you know, perhaps that should be like maybe it shouldn't even let you set up a HomePod unless you have those things up and running the way that it requires.
Yeah, like the app should walk you through that or something, right?
Yeah,
and say, you're missing these crucial components. We can't set this up until you have this stuff installed.
Yeah.
Or like, they shouldn't just leave you hanging, right?
It's right.
Like,
it shouldn't be a mystery.
High five in the air. You can't do anything.
Because, I mean, my experience setting up the HomePod, it was unbelievably fast and beautiful. Mm. It was magical. I'm not kidding. It's the way that they have this stuff work now. I didn't have to type in a network password. I didn't have to do anything. You know, I picked up my phone. A beautiful screen says, "Hi, you know, you must
big,
have just
screen.
Bought a fantastic new speaker. You know, would you like to set it up? Yes, boom, done." You know, I had to accept one or two things or something. I don't even remember. It was over so fast. I couldn't even like. It's like that was awesome. So if I had the experience where I went to turn that thing on. And I, you know, my phone freezes up and I run into all these problems, you know, I mean, that would be a very different experience from what I had. And I wouldn't be that excited about it. I'd go, God dang it. Why is Apple screwing up?
So, I was frustrated with it, but then I heard the first sound come out of it and I was like, uh-oh, I'm not worried about that anymore.
Mesmerized.
all is forgiven.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up with this final story here. We're running long on time, so we got to talk about the story from last week that Leander pieced together like Inspector Gadget did. So we talked about how Apple has been busy hiring a record number of engineers over the last few months, and ever since September, I guess, these openings for engineers have just skyrocketed. They rose 80%. And the company's listings went from 665 open hardware engineering positions to 1,198 as of last week. So what is Apple working on exactly? Clearly, they're working on something, right? So let me just rattle off these jobs that they have available. So these are some of the examples. Analog layout designer, advanced material scientist. We decided that this meant battery technology. 3D perception, computer vision algorithm engineer. Sensor design engineer, motion sensing hardware engineer, magnetics, and I think as soon as Leander tells you what it is, the last one's going to give it away. Flexible display technologist. What do all these jobs have in common, Leander?
Yeah, AR glasses.
They're working on AR glasses. Think about it. Advanced material scientist, battery shape, right? They got to figure out how the battery is going to fit in there. 3D perception, computer vision algorithm engineer. Sensor design, motion sensing, hardware engineer. The question is, if they're ramping up with all these different positions now, does that mean that the glasses have reached a stage where they are seriously committed to actually bringing them to market. What do you think, Leander?
Well, yeah, if they're hiring up engineers, you know, to they're building out the team to build it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, you know, necessarily say what stage it's at. I would say, you know, I would, you know, probably, you know, well, Apple always works in parallel anyway. You know, like when they commit to a product, they start figuring out not only how to build it, but also how to manufacture it.
Hmm.
So they'll already have, they'll, you know, like part of this, I imagine, would be the teams of engineers that are going to be helping get this thing manufactured at scale.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a super important part of the whole process. But yeah, you know, like if this is, the thing is that the list of job titles that we got were sort of cherry picked mm-hmm. by, you know, the reporter who was looking, you know, at these, at hundreds of different applications. I mean, he might have just picked out, you know, the four interesting ones, and you know, there might have been six. They might be trying to find 600, you know, like scroll wheel engineers or something like that. You know,
it could be. Oh, really? Are those open? Man, I love scroll wheels.
It could be something completely different. But you know, if it is, it you know, from those job descriptions, it does kind of sound like an AR display, right?
Oh man, I mean, when you look at all these together, it's like check, check, check. It's all the different parts of the. The AR glasses here.
AR glasses, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we know that everyone else is working on this, and it's the obvious next step. It's the obvious logical next step for, you know, Apple's AR technology. And Tim Cook's taught it up, hasn't he? I mean, they've admitted a couple of times that they're looking into this. So I don't know. Yeah, it would. It's intriguing.
Did you guys see those Intel AR glasses that were released, or I guess are prototype this week? They look like normal glasses.
Yeah,
they look pretty good.
Dude, they actually look pretty good, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of glasses I would get excited about. They don't look like, you know, like a headset from the 80s where you go and play laser tag or something. It's just like a normal headset. They just look like glasses. You know, George Clooney. I can see George Clooney wearing those, and it's like he's sexy, but he's also got some high technology on, right? Am I right?
I'm really, you know, I'm still skeptical of the use case, though. You know, like I don't know, you know, are people really going to be wearing these things? I'm still skeptical about that.
I'm with you there. Yeah, who knows? But you know, one day we'll all be wearing them, and we'll be paying for things with our eye blinks, and we'll be thinking back to this conversation, laughing at ourselves, Leander. What young ignorant fools we were. All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Jeez, mega show. We weren't even planning on having a mega show. It's 50 minutes of me professing my love to HomePod and then asking it to marry me.
Yeah, why don't you? Did you mention how great it sounds?
That's actually not a bad point. It does sound amazing. And if you haven't, no, I'm just joking. Okay, that's good. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. That's all the cultcast we have for you guys this week. Hey, if you want to come talk to us about the HomePod, we're on Twitter. We'd love to hear your thoughts on HomePod. I'm at Arifon Buzzers BST3R. Lewis is at Lewis Waltz. Leander is at L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus-minute conversation. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus-minute conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. You can listen to us now on your HomePod, too. I want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see
it,
you
yeah.
guys on the HomePod. That's right. I can't help but thinking that maybe we were not included in the podcast on the HomePod programmatically. Like it's been blocked at the OS level.
It just works.
It did? I hear it.
Yeah.
They fixed it.
Woo! Oh, they fixed it. Good.
Thanks, Eddie Q. Yeah, and you went boasting about, you know, both Tim Cook and Phil Schiller like in your tweet.
I forgot to mention it.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so I woke up and I saw that Tim Cook had liked my tweet. And I was like, is this the real Tim Cook, right?
Yeah.
And then I saw that it was him. And I just about died.
Not a parody Tim Cook account?
It wasn't a parody Tim Cook or anything, which are all the parody Apple executive accounts all follow me, of course. And And so it was the real TC, as I like to call him.
Sweet.
And then later that day, Phil Schiller liked the same tweet, and I was like,
Does Phil like all the tweets that Tim likes? Or? Yeah.
Well, Erfan mentioned both of them in the tweet.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Oh, I see. So they were at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they probably were perusing my tweets anyway, because they undoubtedly go and look to see what I've been tweeting each day.
Did they follow you after that? Or
no. Kidding me? No. No.
Too bad.
In fact, they blocked me. Now I'm blocked. I thought they had enjoyed the tweet, but then they both blocked me, and I was like, oh.